Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning. Welcome to the weekend and to Talkback Gardening for December. Only it's not John Lamb in the chair this morning. It's the wonderful Brett Draper. Good morning, Brett.
Good morning, Deb.
Lovely to have you here. And of course, being the first weekend of December, our independent climatologist Darren Ray will be with us in just a moment with his seasonal outlook for gardeners.
Absolutely, Deb. And I guess it's an important outlook because we're coming into the warmer months of the year. And what will we receive? Will we receive hot extended weather or heatwave weather, or will it be cooler or milder?
That's right. Well, I know that the Bureau of Meteorology released its summer long-range forecast this week, and what they say is there is a high chance of warmer than usual days and nights across the whole of Australia, below average rainfall likely for much of the tropics and WA, and a more neutral rainfall signal for the rest of the continent. So we'll see how that measures up with what predictions Darren Ray has to make as well. I've got a few questions coming in. Marg from Modbury says, I remember Darren saying that in early November the weather would be hotter and drier, but November's been reasonably mild and wet, and asks, is the El Nino not as pronounced as first predicted, given too that there's been good rains in the eastern states? And interestingly, another question from David in Cainton is very similar. Is the forecast of an El Nino looking a bit more like a La Nina, given the extraordinary rains in the eastern states? We can talk to Darren about that in just a moment. But also, we're here to answer your questions. I'm not. Let's be honest, I'm not. But Brett Draper is. So call in if you would like to put your question in the queue. The number is 1300 222 891, 1300 222 891. Jump on now and we'll take your question after we speak to Darren Ray. And as we're heading into Christmas, I've decided to give away three December ABC Gardening Australia magazines every Saturday until Christmas. So stay tuned for how to do that a little bit later in the program. But right now, I think we should talk to Darren Ray.
Absolutely. Deb, this week obviously has been quite unusual. We actually had, you know, some lovely rain on Tuesday, I think it was, this week.
And quite a bit,
absolutely, which was predicted a little way, but I don't know whether quite that much was predicted. And I guess one thing that a climatologist does is sort of look at the outlooks and what will be happening coming into the future. And it's not necessarily what's happening from day to day, but there's lots and lots of influences out there. And Darren Ray has been incredibly accurate in the last few months in terms of predicting what's going to be happening and when. And I guess today will be no different. And
yes.
And with that, I guess we say good morning to Darren.
Good morning, Darren.
Hi, Deb. G'day, Brett. Lovely to be here.
Yeah. So, Darren, we've just come through a reasonably sort of, I would almost say, slightly cooler November than, I guess, what was predicted earlier. Maybe talk to us a little bit about what the influences were around that for November.
Yeah, it's been a bit of an interesting one, Brett. It really was interesting looking at the November temperature map, because there were below average temperatures for November, but just in a band, narrow band across the southern parts of South Australia. And then you go inland, the temperatures were sort of about three degrees above average in the interior. So really interesting question, what's going on with that. Now, I've spoken about a lot of different climate influences on the show, but haven't really spoken about the influence of ozone levels on weather patterns. And so what we've actually seen is that, so people be aware of obviously climate change, increased greenhouse gases and influence on the climate, but ozone depletion also impacts weather patterns as well. And so one of the way it does that, basically the ozone depletion, which generally kicks off during August, September, October, and November, December, and then starts going down again. The ozone hole in the southern hemisphere goes down again towards the end of the year. That ozone depletion actually causes changes in the weather patterns, which are more conducive to the southeasterly winds over southern Australia. So that changes the position of the high pressure systems a bit and makes things a bit more conducive to cooler southeasterly winds. And we're seeing the southeasterly winds along the southern coast were quite a bit above average through November. So normally this time of year, it's actually starting to, the ozone hole starting to decrease again. But it's actually saw an unusual spike. I was digging into the sort of NASA ozone data yesterday, and there's an unusual spike in November that just was quite strong and actually caused these really strong southeasterlies and what we call the positive phase of southern annular mode. So basically that's the opposite of what you'd normally expect in El Nino. So normally in El Nino you get this negative southern annular mode, and that can bring down more heat from the interior. So yeah, a really bit of an unusual month in terms of that sort of influence from the ozone levels. The really interesting question is whether that's going to persist, because it's opposing the El Nino influence a little bit for where we are in the southern part of South Australia.
So just coming back quickly before you move on from that, with the El Nino just being mentioned, Margaret Modbury has asked, is it going to be as pronounced as first predicted? Another texter here says it was mentioned on the ABC News every day and people were getting concerned, but they're glad the weather gave what it did for gardeners. And David at Cainton wants to know if it's going to be looking more like a La Nina rather than an El Nino.
Yeah, so great question, Deb. So, I mean, I've already touched on that ozone depletion is at least countering the El Nino, what you'd normally expect in El Nino over our part of the world to some degree. The other interesting thing is, like, the rain at the end of November really signals so we're in a period of transition in terms of our climate influences. And that rain in the end of November really signaled that. So as typically happens as the Indian Ocean dipole breaks down, so we've had that positive IOD, that really clamped down on rainfall through most of September and then October and most of November. And then as they normally finish up in IOD events, normally Indian Ocean dipole events, normally break down in from around about mid-November, second half of November. And so that's normally signalled or really probably caused by a burst of tropical activity that breaks it all down. And that leads to the rainfall events, and that's that associated with the breakdown of that. So that's exactly what we saw. We're losing the positive Indian Ocean dipole influence, which tends to clamp down on the rainfall. And so that's good news in terms of getting a bit of rain. And so we're losing the IOD influence, so we're back to, okay, what's happening with El Nino? And I'll just mention that positive SAM influence of the ozone depletion is really that brings down rainfall from the tropics. It's why we've seen a bit of rainfall in the eastern states as well. So yeah, a lot of things going on. So the question now is, okay, what are we going to expect? We've had a bit of tropical activity for December. That's going to be a bit interesting over the next few weeks.
Yeah. So what will December look like, Darren, in terms of, I guess, temperatures?
Yeah. So so we've got a bit of a band of tropical activity moving across northern Australia at the moment, and that's feeding a bit of moisture. Been feeding a bit of moisture across the continent, and that's looking like it's going to move slowly across over next sort of 5 days or so. And feed into a weather system, so it's a bit warmer through next week. There's a cool change coming through next weekend, so there's possibility some thunderstorms for next Friday afternoon and evening, and a bit of a moisture feed with that. We could pick up a little bit of rainfall out of that, so mixed feelings, but it's an opinion in the models, but maybe 5 to 10, but if you get a thunderstorm, they'll come over the top. It could be more like 20 or 30 millimetres. And then so the milder conditions, and then warming up as we go through to mid-month again. And then it's looking like another cold chain, cold front coming through, but a weaker one without a tropical feed, so probably a bit dry.
Be a dry change.
Mm-hmm. Yep, so a bit of a dry change. Around about the 17th and 18th, and then Deb's champing at the bit to know, okay, what's happening for Christmas?
Yes, please.
So basically what I'm seeing is, okay, we're going to change on the 17th, 18th, so a little bit milder for a few day or two, and then warming up again as we head in that week lead up to Christmas. And I'm seeing it's a little bit tricky, but there's a little bit of a hint of a possible another week change just ahead of Christmas. Now, could be wrong on this, but what I'm seeing at the moment is a week change around about the 23rd. And then that means we could be in a sort of warm, a milder phase, you know, coming out of Christmas Eve and then warming up. So And it makes it tricky. I could be very wrong, but I'm going to go with 28 for Christmas Day. And so just on a warming trend through Christmas and through Boxing Day into New Year.
Well, I mean, you are a climatologist. You're not, you know, you're not supposed to be giving us the exact thing, but we've got you nailed there. 28 degrees. I'm going to mark this spot and take it out, and we'll see how close we get there at the end. But thanks, Darren. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
So where does that leave December in terms of annual temperatures and annual rainfall, do you think, Darren?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tricky one because it's hard to know what the ozone levels are going to do. But I'm sort of seeing some hints that positive SAM influence will stay around through December. So more of that sort of, at most we might sit in that sort of, or generally sit in that sort of mid to high 20s into low 30s band, occasionally getting a little bit warmer. But I'm not seeing heat waves for December, which is unusual for an El Niño year and positive IOD year. So that sort of ozone depletion seems to be having an influence. That's looking like it'll kick around through at least through December. January looks warmer. So if you're getting into January, does look like we'll get a stronger pulse of tropical activity probably around the first week of January and through into mid-January. And so more increased chance of rainfall. And on the El Niño side of things, El Niño will be starting to break down. And the ocean modelling has got the ocean temperatures around North Australia warming up really quickly. So normally they're cool and average in El Niño, but they're rebounding very quickly. And that's the other major reason why I think we'll see not typical El Niño responses, particularly the new year. So warmer oceans, warm moisture available. So when we do get a pulse of tropical activity, that can kick off rain. It's a fair point that this El Niño, despite being a reasonably strong one, is actually in terms of the impacts on us, is not looking actually particularly typical in lots of ways.
Yeah. So Darren, does that mean that in January are we likely to receive any sort of heatwave conditions, do you think, or is the possibility of that almost disappeared?
Well, it's looking warm. It's looking like hotter than average. December, I think we'll probably end up just a bit over average overall, but not, as I said, not looking extreme. January does look like that positive SAM signal might hang around a little bit through January, but the end of January and early February, first half of February, looks particularly hot, and I think that's going to be our peak time of heat and most risk of heat waves. But interesting in the modelling, it does drop off really quickly from mid-February, so there's still plenty of heat around. But it doesn't look like as strong, and it morphs into more of a there's pretty clear Indian summer signal there. So we'll see warm conditions persisting for quite a while. People will be able to get in a late planting this summer, and that'll come on pretty nicely, I think, through autumn.
Yeah, so that's from about mid-February, which sounds quite nice, actually, if it just stays quite warm without having heatwave conditions and continues then, I guess, through to autumn. Gardeners will be very happy with that, being able to put in a late planting of seasonal vegetables and things like that. So the pulses of tropical moisture that may develop, if they link, I guess, with a cold front coming through sort of January, is that their best chance of getting any sort of rainfall during that period of time? Do we need those two things to come together for it to happen, or is it just going to happen unexpectedly?
Yeah, absolutely, Brett. It's and that's what we've seen in the last week or so. You know, we had a pretty strong burst of equatorial Rossby wave activity. And so it's that sort of thing that those pulses along the equator, that's really the thing to watch this time of year. And it does look like it gets pretty active through from that sort of first week of January through the middle of January. And then again, sort of weeks 2 and 3 February as well, looking at the really long-term modelling. So, yeah, so it's pretty likely we'll get a couple of, probably a couple more goes at getting some more rainfall, and that, at least that possibility of things linking up. And that's pretty typical for summer. You just probably expect that to not do so much in El Niño, but as I said, we've got those warmer ocean temperatures particularly in the new year, which are a bit unusual for El Niño. That'll probably supply a bit more moisture for some rain.
And I guess also then with February, with that the conditions becoming more milder and an Indian summer sort of situation coming through, what does that sort of mean for rainfall? What are the models saying at the moment? Are we likely to receive, sort of an average sort of rainfall situation, or is it a little bit far out to be able to know?
Well, I mean, the modelling, I'm looking at modelling ensembles that go out sort of 7 months or so. So they do get into, start getting into early autumn, and they overall have, they're not dry particularly, in terms of the outlooks from sort of February, March, April. So they do have some hints of, average to slightly above average rainfall in there. So it does point at that, we could see some more of that, unusual for El Nino kind of weather patterns that we've seen in the last week or so.
Well, if we could just summarise then, Darren, you're saying for December we may have temperatures just above average, is that right?
Yep.
But no real heat waves predicted. For January, warmer than average temperatures. And for February, you're thinking it's going to be above average as well, with the chance of possible heat waves in February, but then tapering off.
Yeah, that late January, February period. So yeah, you're spot on. December looks pretty pleasant in lots of ways. Chance of some rain through middle January, but that biggest chance of heat, late January, first half of Feb. And then the Indian summer conditions, we'll just watch out for some bursts of tropical rainfall.
On rainfall, Darren, what are you saying for December? Is it likely to be around the average, or just too hard to predict with the ozone depletion effects and the ocean temperature effects?
That system next week's, maybe 5 or 10 millimetres, but, it could be 20 or 30 if the thunderstorm comes over the top on the Friday afternoon. Overall, I mean, the modelling's got 10 to 15 millimetres on average, and that's, so something around that is probably around, or 10 to 20 maybe, but there's big error bands on the high side of that. We could end up with more like sort of 20 or 30 millimetres or so.
Okay, so a bit hard to call whether it's going to be average or above average. What about January rainfall?
Yeah, a bit the same. The modelling's got 10 to 15 or 20 millimetres maybe, but there's this possibility it could get a bit wet. The tropics look like they could get pretty active, so we could end up with more like 20 or 30 or so. So unusually for El Nino, it's not looking necessarily as dry as it could have been.
Well, that's not a problem for gardeners. And February the same. It's just hard to tell whether it's going to be above average.
Yeah, similar sort of story, Deb. There's some indications that we might get some decent tropical activity come through, so that, could kick off some decent rain. Ocean temperatures will be quite strong, warming up pretty strongly, so that, a bit of a climate change signal in there over the top of the El Nino. So, it's going to be an interesting summer.
Yeah, well, Darren, by and large, it is very interesting, but actually sounds quite good from a gardening perspective. I guess for gardeners, the most important thing will be to look at for that sort of last week of January, early February, where you're saying that hottest weather will be, to make sure they've got their shade sails up or their shade cloth over their plants, because that will be when they really, really need to protect their plants. But, the possibility of getting a little bit of moisture here and there, I think, is just a fantastic outcome, considering things are going on. And I guess, Deb, should we thank Darren for all of his work this year
absolutely.
And the help and everything that he's done, given it's the last?
Thank you, Brett. You jumped in. Yeah, look, as always, Darren, Darren does this out of the kindness of his heart. So we can't thank you enough for your ongoing involvement with Talkback Gardening. Every first weekend of every month on a Saturday morning. Darren, thank you so much once again for your hard work for us in 2023. And I've got my fingers crossed that you're going to be back with us in 2024 as well.
Oh, yes, I'm not going anywhere.
Great.
It's always a pleasure, David, and talking to you guys. And I hope you all have a good Christmas and everyone has a great Christmas. And look forward to being back next year. And I'm just hope that people get something useful out of what I'm saying. So in terms of planning what they're doing. So that's why I'm here.
And just before you go, Kath says, Darren is such an asset to the program. Offer, yes. So thank you very much. Really, really, really love your work. And we'll catch you in January 2024.
Have a great Christmas, guys.
Thanks, Darren. Feels too early for me to say that to anybody yet because I'm broadcasting right through. So Merry Christmas to Darren, of course, but I'm not saying it to everybody yet because I'm going to be with you for the next weeks. Currently raining in the hills, says this texter, which is great to hear. Yvonne from the Barossa Ranges says we had 70 mils of rain last Tuesday.
Wow, that's incredible, isn't it?
That's a lot. And thank you to the texters, including Jeff, saying lovely to be hearing you on the program as well. Lovely to hear from you. Now is the time to pick up the phone and call in because we want your talkback gardening calls. Brett's here. He's ready to impart his information to you. The number is 1300 222 891. Call in now, 1300 222 891.
This is Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
John's actually on holiday with his family at the moment and Brett Draper is with us this morning. So we'd love to hear from you now. 1300 222 891, 1300 222 891. Thanks to Ed on the text line, which is 0467922891, saying Darren is such a legend. Love his monthly segment. Yep, so do we. So thanks very much for that. Got lots of callers coming through, just waiting to see who we've got on the line here. And it is Stephen in Seaford Park. Good morning to you, Stephen.
Yes, good morning.
You've got a walnut tree.
Yes, that's right. And it's quite large, and I want to know the best time that I should prune it.
Okay. How much do you need to prune it, Stephen? Is it a heavy prune, or you just want to give it a light shape?
Probably what's the best way to go about it? Is it best to trim back about a third, or would it be just a light?
Well, given that the tree is deciduous, the best time to prune is generally during the winter months of the year when the tree's dormant. But if you just need to give it a light shaping and you're not taking off, I guess, any more than a third of the canopy, you could probably do that from now on. But if it's a more structural prune where you need to take off a little bit more than that, then I'd suggest you wait until the tree is dormant and do that during the winter months of the year.
Oh, fantastic. Thanks for that.
Easy done. Thanks, Stephen. Okay. Lovely to hear from you. 1300 222 891 is the number to call. And just a few people saying not everybody's happy with the rain. Of course, people that are trying to reap their grain
absolutely
are having a lot of trouble at the moment. And Frosty says rain in the hills isn't what cherry growers want either, because of course it can lead to split fruit.
It can, and I guess we haven't spoken about that either, if any home gardeners have had any issues with early varieties. And it would probably only be early ripening varieties that would be affected, whether they've had any issues with fruit splitting yet.
And let us know on the text line if you have. 0467 922 891. It'd be interesting to hear if that has happened to you. Deb is in, now it says Alford. Forgive my ignorance, Deb. Where is Alford?
Between Cadena and Port Broughton.
Okay, I should know that. Thank you. Now, you want some advice on creepers?
Yeah, or something that I can grow up a north-facing wall just to keep the sun off. It's a big wall for the house.
Okay, so is it a stone wall or a brick wall, being a house wall, is it? Or is it?
Yeah.
It is, okay. And so being north-facing, there's no other shade there. It's completely exposed to the sun.
Yes.
So it's quite hot.
Yes. That's why I wanted to shade it with a...
Sure, okay. And are you wanting a creeper or a climber that will flower that you can enjoy, or just foliage?
I'm not really fast.
Okay, so, I mean, there's a whole range of climbers, and even earlier we were talking about glory vines. You could use a vine like a glory vine, but there's some really lovely climbers, like some of your Pandorea varieties, and there's a...
Would they be, because I've got one of those growing at the moment over the magpie enclosure.
Yes.
Would they be tough enough to be out there?
Yeah, they should be. Another suggestion would be bougainvillea. Some of your bougainvilleas really, really love the heat. A bougainvillea would really do quite well in that sort of situation. And there's some lovely climbing varieties that you can get, and they're flowering right through the summer months of the year. Do you get frost where you are?
Occasionally.
Okay. It probably would be okay on the actual wall of the house. It would probably be protected enough. Other climbers that you could look at maybe would be things like your honeysuckle or tachoma, some of those varieties. There's some beautiful orange and yellow flowering varieties which would tolerate the heat quite nicely.
I know John's favourite creeper is star jasmine. Would that cope with that full sun in the northern?
Probably
aspect?
Not necessarily the star jasmine, but some of your other jasmine varieties, like your jasmine polyanthems, which have a slightly smaller leaf. The thing with the star jasmine is it's got a little bit of a bigger leaf, which will absorb more heat, and the likelihood of that burning is higher than some of your smaller flowering ones. So a jasmine variety like your jasmine polyanthem. Would be a good suggestion, and maybe even something like a potato vine, for instance, the Siloam potato vines you could actually use as well, which would have a nice white flower to them.
Potato vine.
Yeah, there is a potato vine. Look it up when you do. I just can't think of it's
white flower.
It's got a white flower. Yes. It's Siloam, and I can't think of the other name at the moment. I don't have access to that to look it up. So
yeah, I save seed off my Pandora thingy out there.
Your Pandorea. Yep.
Would they be viable?
They should be. Yes. There's no reason why they shouldn't be.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, so look at maybe propagating them. You might be able to grow them from seed and actually then grow them on your wall.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Deb, for calling in. I've had a quick look on the internet. It might be wrong. Solanum jasminoides?
Yes, it could be. Yes, jasminoides, yeah.
Jasminoides. Okay, so Deb, lots of chances there for you. And bougainvillea, I didn't realise you could put it in the full sun like that. That's something I might take with me as well, Deb, so thank you very much for the call. Ken is in Belair. Oh, and thank you, sorry. First to the texter says cherries are splitting already on Yorks.
Okay,
so yes. There you go. We are seeing that effect. And Frosty's also saying clematis? Creeper? Clematis?
Yeah, it's well, you can say clematis as well, but I think that might be a little bit warm for a clematis in that sort of situation. If it was an easterly facing aspect where it got some morning sun and then afternoon shade, it would probably be okay, but I think clematis would be a bit warm there.
Great. Let's go to Ken in Belair now. What's happening to your zucchini, Ken?
I just want to know whether I can cut them back lengthwise. They wander off across the garden for miles, and I'm wondering if I cut them back, do I lose lots of fruit or would they still produce?
Yeah, Ken, you probably will lose the fruit because they flower and fruit from that growing tip, if that makes sense. Mine do exactly the same. You plant them in one particular spot, and by the end of the season, they're about a metre away.
they tend to walk
a little bit. What you could do, rather than cutting them back, is maybe just have a second planting. If we get a reasonable sort of opportunity, and it sounds like, given the forecast going forward, that we will have some opportunities to actually have a second opportunity to plant, you could maybe plant a second crop of just one or two zucchinis, and then when the one that has gone too far, you can take that out and the next one can take over.
Thanks for the idea. Yep, excellent. Thank you.
Thanks, Ken. Enjoy those zucchinis. They go really well in a ratatouille. I'd love to hear from you. 1-300-222-891. We've got our special Talkback Gardening guest, Brett Draper, in the studio this morning. Would love to speak with you. Alan is in Gawler. Alan, you've had some damage by the weather that we've had recently. Good morning.
Not damage as such. It's probably the opposite. I get a lot of nasturtiums around my place in the winter. Wonderful greenery. And in the late, when the weather warmed up, like now, they all die off. They've all died off before this and down to a mulch. And I just leave things there. But they just come up the last few days from that weather we had, the rain we had, and the nasturtiums just popping their heads up a bit, and a few flowers as well here and there, and just wondering how they're going to go. And they went under a good shady tree, though, and I was wondering what the prospects are for nasturtiums in a reasonably ideal position and shelter position.
Yeah, well, Alan, providing once the weather warms up again, providing they get you know, a good amount of moisture content, they will continue to grow. So obviously that rain has germinated the seed bank of seeds that were sitting in the soil, because the soil's now nice and warm, and that rain's really brought them back to life.
It's all a mulch, actually. It's just the mulch from the...
Oh, it's the mulch where they've come down, you're using it as a mulch, yeah. And look, one thing with nasturtiums, if they do, because they do grow absolutely wild at times, they can really supercharge, when they're green and leafy, when you cut them back or need to pull them back, pop them in your compost, they really supercharge your compost in terms of the heat that they generate.
Use them for compost. I just leave them as a mulch on the ground. And
so do I, Alan. That's exactly what I do.
Well, anything that helps suppress the weeds and do things is ideal. So look, Alan, yes, going forward, they providing, you know, you give them a regular water during the next, you know, few months, they will continue to grow, definitely. If you don't, you'll find that they will just die off again, and that's fine. And the moment we get some good rain and the weather sort of cools off again, they will spring back to life. They are very, very resilient.
I'll see how we go. It might be a little crop for Father Christmas reindeers when he comes along.
Absolutely. That's a good way to look at it.
And I tell you what you can also do, Alan, if you want to make your salads look gorgeous, is pick the flowers. And they're quite edible and they look amazing on your salads.
I'll try that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's great to hear someone doing exactly what I do. If you don't have a lot of time and your nasturtiums grow wild, I do just leave them. They do act as mulch. And I love them because they look beautiful. And then they help your soil.
They do. That's right. Exactly. They break down into and add the organic matter that you need. So that's terrific.
And just a suggestion also on creepers. Yes. Jasmine azoricom, very hardy in flowers all summer, says this texter.
Yes, that's another good suggestion. Absolutely.
And with Ken's zucchini, Trudy at Nairn says you can tie zucchini plants up on a stake like we do for tomatoes.
Well, look, you can. You can trellis them, definitely. That's another way to do it. If you've got limited space, you could trellis them you know, in your actual veggie bed. You could make an obelisk, if you like, out of some garden stakes or some bamboo stakes, or you can buy obelisks that you can put in there. The same thing you can do with your cucumbers as well. Cucumbers, you can trellis them, and that way the fruit themselves won't be sitting on the ground and you'll have unblemished fruit.
Oh, and a great tip there as well. Thank you for your texts. The text line 0467922891. But we want you to pick up the phone and dial in with your questions for Brett on 1300 222 891. Beautiful photograph being sent here. Thank you so much from whoever sent it. It says, foggy with occasional real rain in southern ranges this morning. My favourite weather. Wish summer was always like this. Darren is right in the southeasterly dominance, and we have often been 8 degrees cooler than Adelaide. Thank you very much, whoever sent that through. Lovely photograph. And Ross at Carralta Park says, sprinkling with rain right now at Carralta Park. Thank you for that. We'll talk back gardening with Brett Draper. We'll come to more of your calls in just a moment. It's 23 minutes to 10.
It's Australian history with a glamorous difference.
I'm Celeste Barber. I've put my hand up to rummage through Australia's wardrobe to uncover our most fascinating fashion history.
From the power of the media...
We ran Australian fashion.
...to the push for social change.
I had never walked down a runway before carrying my culture with me.
The way we wore.
I love fashion.
Tuesday nights on ABC TV and stream all episodes free on ABC iView.
Talk Back Gardening with John Lamb,
Brett
and
Draper.
Deb Tribe on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
It's Brett Draper in the chair for John today. Jenny is in Torrens Park. Jenny, you have got some tomatoes. They're going quite well.
Well, I'm not a bad gardener, but I've never been able to grow tomatoes. And this year, I put them in a raised garden on a trellis about 2 square metres, and they've gone gangbusters, and I've got, you know, these sprays of little tomatoes coming everywhere. And now the vine wants to grow more, and I haven't got any more trellis room. Should I just cut off those extra branches? Because I really can't support them, you know, anymore. Mm. So will I just, I've got heaps there and I just don't know quite what to do, whether to...
Yeah, it's a tricky one, Jenny. I guess if you've reached your limit in terms of what you can fit in that particular space and you don't have any more, then I would say, yes, trim them off. But, you know, it's a good place to be in when you've got too much, because many people don't get enough fruiting on their actual tomatoes. But it won't hurt the plant if you need to to actually trim them off, that will be fine.
Yeah, I think I just have to keep it manageable because it's going nuts. It's like the Triffids here.
Yeah, and look, that's really what I've experienced as well. Even in the last few days since the rain that we've had, my tomato plants in the ground, which were quite small because I planted them quite late being in the hills, have, I reckon, doubled in size in just the last few days. And I'm sure other people are experiencing the same situation.
Yeah, I think so. It's just been, you know, not too hot and, you know, a bit of rain and so on. So thank you, Brett. I'll do that, I think. Thank you.
Thanks, Jenny, for calling
in. And enjoy your tomatoes.
Yes, lots of them by the sounds. Thanks, Jenny. The number is 1300 222 891. Just coming back to creepers again. On the text line, this texter says, Canidia black coral pea, gorgeous black and yellow pea flower, bird attracting, love full sun, and covers a big area.
It does. That's a creeper rather than a climber. I think the lady from Alpha was looking for a climber, but that would be an excellent suggestion for a creeper on the ground. Absolutely. And it's great for attracting birds.
Longy says, here is an open letter to anyone over 65 years of age. Please do not plant creepers on your property, because one day someone like me will have to come down and clean up the huge jungle because you've suddenly become too old to look after it. Love from Longy. Thanks, Longy. Very good. And got some beautiful photographs here of a recycled pallet. Someone's, you know, chopped it up and put it into a beautiful, really very, very attractive looking vegetable bed with some tomatoes flourishing in it. Thank you very much for that. Lovely to see. Malcolm is in Croydon. Now, Malcolm, you want to transplant some Agapanthus. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Yes, good morning. I'm transplanting some. Just a question is, like, do you cut the tops off or just leave them?
Ideally, Malcolm, you should actually cut the tops off. So when you're transplanting any plant, and Agapanthus are no different, obviously they're a very hardy plant, but when you're transplanting them, you often cut the root. So the root, you have a root system, which when you come in, you can't save all of the roots. That's just the reality of when you're transplanting. So to get the balance in terms of the loss of the root zone, you do need to cut the actual foliage back as well. And with an Agapanthus, you can be quite hard, so you can cut it back by at least, you know, sort of two-thirds, and I would be recommending that you cut it back by two-thirds before replanting them.
Okay.
All right.
And thank you.
If there's any flowers on them, if they're flowering yet, they may not be, it's a little bit early, but if they're flowering, you need to remove the flowers as well.
Yeah, I've done that. I've cut the flowers off.
Yes.
And a bit of seaweed.
Yes, when solution. You're planting them, definitely. And again, being a very, very hardy plant, but when you're transplanting any sort of plant, if you can apply a liquid seaweed-based plant tonic to help with the transplant shock, say on a fortnightly basis for the next sort of 6 to 8 weeks, you'll find that they'll establish very, very quickly.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thanks very much for calling in, Malcolm. 1300 222 891 is the number. Now, Mason in Mansfield Park, you've got a bit of a tip for mulching. Hi, Mason.
I want to grow grass. If I can ask Brett, if I want to grow grass encircling my tree, using it as mulch to keep the sun off the bark, off the trunk, is that safe to do that? Just sort of growing it up about 300 millimetres.
So what sort of grass were you thinking, Mason? You're not talking about a lawn sort of grass, then you're talking about maybe a native sort of grass or something that grows a little bit taller, or?
No, kaikuya.
Kaikuya that's there. It's probably not a good idea to use that in that sort of application. I mean, the kaikuya itself, and where you've got a tree planted in any lawn, you should probably keep the grass or the turf back from the trunk of the tree by sort of, you know, 30 to 40 centimetres around that tree. It's fine on the ground to use as a mulch to help keep the area cool. And if you water the lawn to keep that nice and green, you'll find that the tree will benefit from that moisture as well. But if you're looking, depending on what sort of tree it is, if you're looking at shading the bark, you may want to look at maybe, you know, putting some sort of, on those worst days, putting some sort of shade cloth or some sort of structure there to shade the tree. What sort of tree is it, Mason?
Oh, I've got lots of trees here, but the ones I'm talking about are deciduous. So yep. An apple, apricot.
So they're fruit trees.
That sort of thing. Yeah,
yep.
Fruit trees.
Yeah.
They're all about 10 years old. But I've been doing this for a few years, and I've been thinking, I'd better ask John if it's okay to do this, because I am about 300 mil from the bark encircling it, right? Diameter, circumference.
Yes, yep.
So a diameter is 300 mil right around the trunk.
Yeah.
So and then the grass that I cut, the lawn, comes up to that 300, you know, comes up to the there anyway. So instead of cutting that lawn right down, I leave just a little bit so it comes up high, about 300 mil, and it seems to shade the ground where the trunk is, you know, that sort of perimeter.
Well, look, I would suggest if that's what you've been doing and you've been having good success with it, then continuing to do that. I mean, obviously it's working in that particular area, and as long as the grass itself is not touching the trunk, it's out from the trunk, I think that's fine. I keep doing it.
Okay, all right. And, of course, you know, in areas where the sun doesn't get to the trunk, you know, that base area, I cut the lawn down in that section.
Mm.
So, you know, there's lots of air getting through there and all that.
Yeah, that's fine. And look, the other thing is too, and there's obviously not so much in Australia, but in the UK, for instance, they, during their spring and summer months, they have no mow months where they don't mow their lawns and things to help with biodiversity, because it allows grasses and even some weed species, if you like, to come up and actually form flowers to encourage pollinators and pollinating insects to come into the garden. So, you know, there is something around that by letting some grass grow. As long as it doesn't get out of control, I think that's a good thing to continue.
Well, my logic towards it was always, the grass surrounds, you know, the whole yard's full of grass, right, Kaikuya, and then you've got your trees plonked in, you know, the grass is cleared from certain, you know, from around the trunk, and then why not let a little bit grow up and just sort of shades the area that we put the mulch on.
Mm. Well, look, as I said...
I don't like mulching trees, you know, around the trunk area.
Yeah, but look, if it's working, I can continue to do that.
Don't fix what ain't broke, Mason. Yeah. Thanks very much for that. Appreciate it. Greg is in Broken Hill. Now, doesn't sound like things are going too well for your apricot tree there, Greg. Hello.
No, it's not actually, and I've nurtured this since it was a seedling. I've turned it into a standard. It's 8 foot high and it's about 6 foot, 7 foot in circumference.
Yes.
It's like a ball. Quite nice. Full of fruit. Last year, I had the unfortunate thing of having fruit fly. And I went and checked it again this morning, and I've also found fruit fly again. And I don't know whether just to cut the tree down. I don't want to do that because it looks nice being a standard.
Yes, yeah.
And I don't know how I could treat it.
No, well, Greg, I wouldn't be cutting the tree down. I'd be enjoying the tree, particularly when you've put so much effort into growing it and getting to where it is now. Of course, we don't here in most of South Australia don't have fruit fly, and it's appeared a little bit in the Riverland, and it's being controlled at the moment. But there are some pheromone traps that you can actually buy. And so if you go to your local nursery or garden centre, or even if you've got reasonably sort of good hardware store, there's some pheromone traps that you can buy to put into your tree, which will lure and attract the fruit fly to there. The other thing that you could use is there's a product called Success Ultra, and that's registered for the control of fruit fly as well. And that will control them on the tree that's there. So, and that will be readily available at any good garden centre as well. And that's probably your best defence. I mean, if you can put out the lure traps to attract them to the traps rather than your tree, and if they do appear, spray them with Success. That will control them and hopefully from then infecting any fruit that you might have.
And did you mention reporting them? I mean, that's something you need to do as well,
I imagine. Yeah, well, being in Broken Hill, I think it's a little bit different because it's New South Wales, Deb. So in South Australia, we would do that. Mm. But I'm not sure what the primary industry component in New South Wales do, because I don't think they have the same sort of restrictions as what we do.
Okay, we'll just check with your local council.
It would be worth checking just in case. Yeah.
Greg, thanks for the call. Love to Broken Hill. My nana was born in Broken Hill, so I feel like I'm part Broken Hillian. Jackie at West Croydon, coming back to the issue of what you grow under your trees, says, I have a juga, under my deciduous trees, and because it grows on the surface, it acts as living mulch. So what's a juga?
A juga is a lovely leafy ground cover, which several different varieties. There's a Caitlin's Giant, which has a green, quite a large green leaf. They get flower spikes probably about 10 10 or 15 centimetres with a beautiful sort of pale blue, lavendery sort of colour. There's also a burgundy leaf form, and they look really, really lovely under a deciduous tree or a shady tree. Camellias, they look spectacular underplanted. It doesn't like a lot of sun, so it's ideal where it just might get some dappled sun through the canopy of the tree. And yes, it does actually act as a bit of a mulch as well, which is ideal.
Wow, Jackie, great suggestion. Thank you very much. I'll have a look at one in the break. And Sue says, I love the show. Missed last week. Will it be downloaded on the ABC Listen app? Well, it's certainly already online on ABC Listen. I've just had a quick flick, and that was with Dominic Cavallaro last week. So if you can't find it on the Listen app, just go online to abc.net.au/talkbackgardening and you'll find it there. Thank you very much. Now, we are in December, so Christmas isn't far away. So I've got three ABC Gardening Australia magazines to give away. I'll give away two on the phone line, one on the text line. We'll pick one at random. So if you haven't won anything from ABC Radio Adelaide in the last month, because we like to share the love around, call in on 1300 222 891, and we'll pick one from our text line, which is 0467 922 891.
You're with Deb Tribe.
Deb Tribe.
On ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
We love getting together with you every Saturday morning here on Talkback Gardening. John Lamb having a little bit of leave, but Brett Draper is here in the studio to take your questions. And we've got lots of callers through for the magazines. I'll tell you who wins in just a moment, but we'll go to Mal in Pasadena now. What's happened to your tomatoes, Mal?
Yes, good morning, Deb and Brett. I've got the Roma tomatoes, and we've looked in the Roma tomato variety there, and we've got the San Marzano variety. Mm-hmm. They're huge.
Yes.
They are probably about, in old measurements, they're about 3 inches long and about inch in diameter, and they're like grapes. There are heaps of them, absolutely off of one plant. Since that last lot of big rain we had here the other day there, the bottoms of a lot of the tomatoes have gone brown.
Mm. Yeah, so it's
I'm wondering what that's all about.
It could be your blossom end rot, Mal, that appears in the bottom of the tomatoes. And it's generally caused after heavy rains or with irregular watering, but it's generally a lack of calcium, caused by a lack of calcium in the soil and the availability for the plant to actually pick that up. Is it all of the fruit that's affected, or is it just some of the fruit?
No, just some of the fruit.
Yeah, it's just some of the fruit that's affected, yeah. One of the really important things with your tomatoes like that and prior to planting them is if you can add some things like gypsum to the area prior to planting, which is calcium sulfate, that actually helps to increase the level in the soil prior to planting. And as the plant grows, it picks it up, and that generally means that going through the season that you don't have an issue. But regular watering, I guess, is the key to stopping that from happening. Now, why it's happened just now, it's hard to say. Sometimes it can just be a trigger that causes it. But it is not likely, you know, to affect all of the crop. It's probably only going to affect some of them in there. So maybe the ones that are affected, my best suggestion would be you could either pick them off, or they will continue to develop. And depending on what you want to use them for, you can still use, you know, the top half of the fruit, just cut the bottom half off, and it just means that it's not necessarily as usable in a salad, or if you're going to make a passata or pasta sauce with it, if that makes sense.
Good, yeah, that does make sense there. We're just finishing off the last of our winter tomato, which we had one plant of the winter tomato there, and we had probably 3 dozen tomatoes off of one bush, and they were, oh, inch and a half, 2 inch diameter tomatoes. There was lots and lots and lots of them. I've never grown winter tomatoes beforehand.
Yum.
But they've been very, very successful. And yes, they are very, very nice as well too. The other thing which I'd love to promote there, which we have every year there now, is the Malabar spinach.
Oh yes, the Malabar
spinach. Malabar spinach is just starting to go up the trellis, and that's very, very nice in salad and very, very nice to cook with as well too.
So your Malabar spinach is a climbing spinach, and actually it works really, really well in a trellising in a veggie patch, particularly if you want to help shade some other veggies that are there. So
Great, beautiful now.
In a salad.
Yeah, thanks for the suggestions. Congratulations to our magazine winners via telephone, Gail in Salisbury Heights and Diane in College Park, and our SMS winner is Jenny in Nuriutpah. I've got time for a last quick call with Martin in Gawler. Hi, Martin.
Hello. Just got a query in relation to pruning a capital pear, a flowering pear.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be pretty upright. It's been in since 2003 when we moved in. I put a bigger Eucerus in, sort of a bit lower down in a triangle, but it's about 4 metres from my neighbour's gutter. And I find that some of the lower branches, it's supposed to be very upright, it says 10 by 3 metres, but it's actually about 12 by 6 at the moment.
Right, okay.
And in storms, some of the lower branches have leant across and were banging on my my neighbour's gutter. So I pruned it a little bit a couple of years ago. I took about 20% off, but I did it in June because of the old prune in June that I remembered as a lad. But
when they're dormant,
Somebody on the program in the middle of winter this year, not John Lamb, but there was a pruning specialist on, said something about pruning ornamental pears in January.
So there's a lot of trees, and this happens with stone fruits as well, that you can actually give them a summer prune, and by doing that light summer prune, it actually reduces the vigour. So often what happens is in winter when we prune and prune hard, it puts the tree or the plant back into growth mode, and whatever you prune off, it tends to come back to the same length, if not even more. But by pruning them in January, it changes the hormone response within the plant, and rather than it just putting all that extra growth and growing back to where it was in the first place, it just fills in and grows nicely on those edges. So providing you're not removing any more than 20%, pruning towards the end of, you could even do a little bit later too. You could even do it sort of mid to late February going into autumn. And that will actually then, as I said, change the hormone response and mean that the plant itself won't go back into strong growth and therefore will give you the desired effect where it won't be rubbing on the gutters of the house.
Okay, thanks, Martin. Hope that's answered your question. Thank you to Anne, who sent through a beautiful picture of her magnolia bloom and says, I can't believe how much pollen this little guy is getting from my beautiful little gem magnolia bloom. 2 full bags on his little legs in no time. I named this tree after my sister Anne, who died of motor neurone disease. Anne loved magnolias. Thank you. What a beautiful question. I think that's from Gabriel. Really appreciate that. And can we spell the name of the ground cover mentioned? And thank you to Jackie, who sent through a picture of it looking gorgeous. It's Ajuga, A-J-J-U-G-A, is that right?
Yes, correct, Deb. Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. And David of Cainton says, given our Newry forecast of mid to high 30s next week, my immediate job is to prepare my temporary shade system to protect my rather vulnerable tomatoes, cucumbers and zucchinis, still too young and tender for such heat. That's a good idea, isn't it?
It's very good advice. Perfect time to do it.
Wonderful. Well, just quickly, because we've got the news upon us, what's looking good in garden centres if people want their Christmas garden looking a bit wowish?
Look, absolutely. If they want some wow sort of plants, perennials, salvias, gauras, osteospermums, calabacoas are looking spectacular. From an annual perspective for the sun, vincas, petunias, marigolds and snapdragons. If you want something for the shade, look at getting some impatiens, New Guinea impatiens, lobelia and bedding begonias. The begonias at the moment are looking just spectacular.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Brett. Always a pleasure to have you here as our talkback gardener.
It has been my pleasure this morning, Deb.
And so until next week,
good gardening.